Amen. Thank you. Baptist history. We're looking at a time between, let's just say right now up to the 1200s, from the first century through the 1200s. We're giving attention to churches in Wales. A lot of our interest and attention given to Wales and England or Britain, we have an idea, I think, that is fairly wrong from history, that Wales and England have always been the same, because in our lifetimes and in most modern history, they are, and the family of royalty, as we know, the kings and queens of government in England, are over Wales also, as if it was all one country and always have been. The Welsh people had a distinct language and were separate from anything going on in England until about 1100, 1200. That's the first time that the people in Wales came under the government of England, their royalty. Okay, it wasn't until that time. So everything before then, the people in Great Britain, for the most part, were separate tribes of people. The Welsh people had their own language and pretty much distinct culture up until the 1200s. Now, why does this even matter? Because, as we've been looking at already, in the first century, the apostles and New Testament churches were already taking the gospel, and churches were being started and established there in Wales, long time before England was known and recognized and taken over. They were, historically, the only thing I can almost liken it to is just the separate, when you read about them in early history, especially before the year 1000, they were not nomadic like the Arabs are, but they were really separated by families as chieftains, and many times that's how they're going to be recognized historically. The people that that lived in Wales, just like many of the Arab peoples, they were tribal, they were family, they were not nomadic, but much of the environment and the even the natural area where they lived, not the desert land that we think of, maybe more familiar with, of the Arabs in the Middle East, but very hilly and mountainous, kind of hard to get into, such as what we're familiar with in church history just a little bit, even though the location's different. What we read about last night with the church at Ottolon in Wales, and we're going to about the Hillcliff Church that we trace our lineage back through, that for the 400 or 500 years especially, and maybe longer than that, from the Hillcliff Church to the coming across the Atlantic when the United States was formed into the colonies and the Philadelphia Association and then the other associations and things that were settled then. I bring this all up because I don't want our heritage to get lost in that, because during that time, most interest by historians, what's most popularly known about are the particular or general Baptists in England. These aren't going to be known and recognized until the and separation and distinction made between these two Baptists. I know in green and not real dark, and I'm sorry about that, what I put on the board. before class this morning. But between general and particular Baptists, generally coming from England, though, and from London, England, particularly, where they're known as having their origin and their start, and coming over to the colonies here in the United States when our independence and the formation of our early states along the eastern seaboard, most Baptists are going to be known because it started with the separation of Baptists in England during the Reformation, even as late as the 15th, 16th, and then 1700s when they all came to the United States, as being either general or particular Baptists. But my interest, and the reason why I'm trying to emphasize so much what went on in Wales and the existence of Baptists in Wales long time before even the 1190s and into the 1200s when Wales became part of England, there had always been Baptists and Baptist churches in Wales that continued to remain separate and were many times not either general or particular Baptists. By that denomination, they're even known historically separate in England. And also when they came into the United States, either as churches or to be recognized as denominations, even while American Association and American churches and the presence of Baptists in America would get started, they would many times be classified as either general or particular Baptists, the general Baptist being, and maybe terms we're a little bit more familiar with, Arminian or Calvinists with the particular Baptists. But I bring all this up because the Welsh Baptists predate them by hundreds of years and were never a part of either one of them, even though many historians will put them with one or both. The Welsh Baptists were separate. And even when we come across into the United States, we're not going to get there yet in our discussion this morning and probably even next week when we begin to look at some of the peoples, especially from the churches in Wales, they were not Arminian and they were not Calvinistic, but they were Baptists, even as we saw from the quotes last night, that followed after and were recognized by the Church of England and even other Baptists as holding to the particular apostolic succession and practices of the first century, not the Calvinistic or even the Arminian traditions of the associations that were so common in London during that time. Brother Bo.
I was just thinking while you're talking here, you know, Jesus said, I came not to bring peace but a sword. And from a historical perspective, you know, a lot of times from man's history, Baptists all get lumped in together or the same term, you know, in terms of Baptists or whatever. But what's great about Baptist history is not just our lineage, that we can go back to dates and places and locations, but we can go back to the lineage and the succession of doctrines. The core doctrines and then the core practices. You know, it's I haven't read minutes or anything from this far back, but you know, you can read the minutes and you can read some of the church history about how they did things, and it's like they're doing things the same way they did them in the book of Acts. Mm-hmm. And they're doing things the same, and I'll use us uh-huh. in an arrogant manner, but you know, they're doing things the same way we do them now or have tried to do them now. And so it's not just that lineage and name, of course, from a historical perspective, but when you get to things like this, where man's history, secular history, looks at all of these as Baptists, well, we can go back, like you're saying, to the Welsh and or whatever, and we can look at that lineage of Bible doctrines and practices that separated that was continuous. And when Jesus said, you know, the gates of hell would not prevail against it, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about that lineage of Bible-believing, Bible-teaching and practicing assemblies, you know, throughout the ages. And, you know, it's never changed. It hasn't changed. It hasn't some, but there's been that line. And I think the first couple pages of the Trail of Blood talks about that. You know?
Right.
I remember reading the Trail of Blood thinking, it's going to dive right into all the persecutions and everything. And then same with that Baptist history book, I forget the name.
Faithful Witness?
You know, they all start off with Baptist doctrines. They start off identifying Baptist distinctive. Why? Because that's what they were persecuted for, because they would not compromise.
And we call them many times Baptist distinctives, but when they are examined, they end up being more than Baptist distinctives by denomination, Bible distinctives because of the use of. And not to just drive it into the ground, but how careful Baptists in history, at least usually a third group especially, because general and particular Baptists would even have their own doctrinal statements. But what separated them from, and it becomes important because in history, not just in England, but when they came over to the United States, across the Atlantic, it's still a distinction that's recognized many times in historic writings, but many historians don't give near the attention that they do to either general or particular Baptists, but to the Welsh Baptist churches. They're always, it seems like a third leg that if you read enough history from the same people, aren't near as popular or common or so much attention given to them, but there's always that third group, Welsh Baptists, because they always remain separate from, even though we think of them coming from the same place, from Britain. But they were completely separate from the particular and the general Baptist in London. And that's important to see and recognize, because even when the states were being formed as late as in our own independence in the mid-1700s, early 1800s, some of the persecution and some of the things that Baptists were still enduring here in the early United States were not because they were particular or general Baptists, but they were, in history a lot of times, they'll either be known by, and especially early American history, almost two other names that are pretty much synonymous. They were either Separatist Baptist or they were Welsh Baptist because of the origin of whole congregations that came over from the Welsh areas in Britain today. And we don't recognize a big difference in that presently. But up until about the year 1200, they were completely separate with their own culture, their own language. Everything was separate. And the reason why that becomes important, when we claim lineage from the Hillcliff Church in Warrington, Wales, what date does that happen? Even generally, we've got it on the sheets I passed out a couple of weeks ago.
93?
Yeah, well, no, but about 930, 960. So that's still 200 years before England is even united with the people of Wales, united with the people of England. They were separate Baptists and predate not only the Reformation going on in the rest of Europe and everything else that England has to deal with at that time, but predating even this distinction, first real distinction of Baptists historically, of the general and particular Baptists, Immediately after, and while the Reformation and all the other Protestants are coming about there in Europe, England and France, Germany, while all that's going on, hundreds of years before that, what I want us to see and take note of, there are Baptist churches and Baptist associations in Wales, Great Britain. And not even that church in Hillcliffe, outside of Warrington, in Wales, was there continuously throughout that time. But just tracing the links back, who started, how did that church in Hillcliffe that we're going to look at and recognize this morning in our history, where did that come from? The Piedmont Church in the Swiss Alps. That didn't come with a direct origin from Wales, but it's in the 700s, no, the 900s, but from the year 700, that church in the Swiss Alps got started, and then 200 years later, still a long time before Wales and England combine and come together, we have this church at Hillcliffe that is part of the lineage that we recognize. Okay, questions, comments about that, Brother Josh?
Well, it's interesting, talking about particular churches to me, when you come to, and I know you're going to come to this, which is interesting with particular Baptists, 1900 you come to, and the president of the SBC writes about Baptists, and he writes about the question of immersion not being practiced for hundreds of years. He writes, though, and he talks about his source. I'm seeing this. His source, though, William H. Twitchett's source, is the study of particular Baptists. And he's looking at those guys, and yeah, sure, those guys probably did leave off immersion as a practice because they had other practices that were wrong with them. But good Baptists never did.
Okay, so what's that talking about? Let me just emphasize it a little bit more as I've been teaching. General and particular Baptists in Great Britain. There's no hard evidence that either one of these two practiced immersion for baptism before, 1614?
The mid-1600s.
Is the argument that it's not until after the 1600s that you can find proof and hard evidence that they baptized by immersion, even the general and particular Baptists. But as we've been looking at in history, and we're going to continue to, the Welsh Baptists, there's evidence that they were practicing believers' baptism by immersion long time before that. And that's where we trace our lineage through. Not either one of these. Brother Dale.
You've been sort of emphasizing here, and I forgot about this book, but there's a difference. You start off today with Welsh, the Wales in England. I just tend to put it all together, but there is a distinct difference
in language and culture.
It's totally different. Even though, in my mind, I sort of put them all together today. And then you've also mentioned, and we've talked about the Alps. The group in town, in the city, started giving over to popery and different things, and some
and a lot more influences of.
But
the Reformation.
People, you're using the word separate. The people that lived through hundreds of years were separate, and they didn't have a part of that. Can I read one paragraph? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's from Davis's book that you have.
Davis's book. I just
please do.
I love to come across this. So this is a. But it says God had a regular chain of true and faithful witnesses in this country, in Wales, okay, in every age. From the first introduction of Christianity to the present time, who never received nor acknowledged the Pope's supremacy. Like the thousands and millions of inhabitants of the Vale of Piedmont, residing on green and fruitful meadows, surrounded by high and lofty mountains, separated from other nations, as if the all-wise Creator had made them on purpose as places of safety for his jewels that would not bow to the knee of Baal. No wonder then Dr. Mosheim said this is the true origin of the sect called Anabaptists. So just that, I don't even understand the geography that well, I'd love it, but they were just separate, they were safe. Yes, they had to run up into the mountains, and yes, we read about some of those things, but for the most part, the people in the city didn't have anything to do with them.
Right? Yeah.
They were totally independent by themselves, able to go on and not be influenced until the Roman army, or until really put their forces and chased them up.
Okay. When the Church of England and the royalty of England adopted and brought in Wales, when they were finally captured by the English, which is what happened, I mean, their armies went in and developed and brought them in, their Baptist churches, especially the separatist churches in Wales, remained separate. And we're going to find even some letters that they wrote, still in the archives there in England, of protest asking them to be allowed to worship and to continue in their same practices, depending on who was king or queen at the time. Some let them do it and some did not. But I find it very interesting that in different generations after 1200, they had those discussions with the king and with parliament that sometimes went their way, sometimes didn't, because through that whole time, those separatist churches in the Wales remained separate from the Church of England. They continued to stand for believers' baptism for adolescent and adults that were at least responsible enough to make confession of repentance and faith, not the baptism of infants that was being imposed upon by both Catholic and then the Church of England when that developed. There really was no difference between the Church of England and their imposing that and their persecution upon not only Protestants but Baptists during this time. So again, one of the other historical things that kind of brings my interest especially are how many there are, and they're numerous, and sometimes the outcome was different, like I said, depending on who the monarch was at the time. Sometimes they were given allowance without persecution. Other times they were similar to what Austin did, what Augustine did, like we read about last night. They called their ministers, their representatives, their messengers together, and if they did not immediately submit to the Pope or the Cardinal or whoever was in charge at the time, they were immediately persecuted. Many of those that were even gathered on that day and occasion. Okay. But there were always separatists that hold to first century, it's sometimes called in the scriptures, apostolic practice, because they were using, like we talked about last night and so many times in their own words, the scriptures as their authority and their model for their worship and practice, not any compromise of man, and they didn't want any imposition or any laws. They didn't want the Pope or the King or anybody else telling them how they had to worship and serve. Okay? Brother Travis.
That I've been thinking of, so when we think of England, like you said at the beginning, you know, it's a United Kingdom. Well, it didn't become the United Kingdom until like 1800, 1801.
Not completely like we think about it today.
there was Northumbria, Mercia, there was Wales, there was kingdoms within England.
Many of them,
there
yeah.
were many kings.
Scotland?
England.
Yeah.
And so in the, you know, 1200s, like you said there, when, you know, the main king in London area took over Wales, there was still factions of different kingdoms within that island. And so we don't see that because, you know, we're America and
today they're United Kingdom.
But if you learn a little bit more of the English history in those years, you can understand why, you know, like you said, the Separatists, Baptists, why they wanted independence, because that was rooted in the English peoples that, no, this is my kingdom. This is the way we do things. And to our mind, it's, you know, no, that's the United Kingdom. Well, that's a modern history thing. This history you're reading about is there were different languages within that island and
cultures and practices.
And cultures and religions and practices. So there's this separatist idea in that country in these times. Yeah.
And even when they come to the United States, why is it called the Church of England? Because the Episcopalians were combined with, as early as the 1200s, the monarchy, and were imposing Catholic and Episcopalian practice and their hierarchy of priesthood to all the churches within their realm. That's why they had to appeal by sending letters, as I made mention of, to allow their churches that had already been there to remain separate in practice and doctrine, and not be persecuted under threat of death, to submit to the priest and the practices of the Church of England.
Because the king was the head of the church.
Because the king was the head of the church. Yeah. Okay, so we're not always aware of or think about that. Don't know real well the history of. But it becomes important in our study of Welsh churches. Okay? And so, I'm glad we did. I hope there's a better understanding and awareness of that. But I do want to give some attention to the Hillcliff Church near Warrington in Cheshire, modern England, but Wales. Okay? At an early date, a Baptist church was here located. We date it back to at least 987. English Baptists constantly mention this church as having had its origin far beyond or before the Reformation. The historian Godby appeared to give a fair representation of the facts. We have reliable evidence that a Separatist and probably a Baptist church has existed for several centuries in a secluded spot of Cheshire on the borders of Lancashire, about a mile and a half from Warrington. No spot could be better chosen for concealment than the site on which the ancient chapel stood. Removed from all public roads, enclosed by a dense wood, affording ready access into two counties, Hillcliff was admirably situated for an erection of a conventicle, but an illegal conventicle, because it was a church, illegal and separate from the state of England. Okay. The ancient chapel built on this spot was so constructed that the surprised worshippers had half a dozen secret ways of escaping from it, and long proved a meeting place suited to the varying fortunes of a hated and hunted people. Persecutions that were going on at the time. Owing to the many changes inseparable from the eventful history of the church at Hillcliff, the earliest records have been lost. But two or three facts point to the very early existence of the community itself. In 1841, the old chapel was enlarged and modernized, and in digging for the foundation, a large baptistry of stone, well cemented, was discovered. Why would that be? Because they were practicing immersion a long time before there were any general and particular Baptists by the separatist Baptists in Wales. How long this had been covered up and in what period it was erected, it's impossible to state. But as some of the tombstones in the graveyard adjoining the chapel were erected in the early part of the 16th century, there is probability that the tradition of the chapel itself was built by the Lollards, who held Baptist opinions. How far back do the Lollards go? At least to Switzerland and the valleys of Piedmont, where this church got its origin. One of the early dates on the tombstones in their churchyard is 1357, the time when Wycliffe was still a fellow at Merton College in Oxford. But the dates most numerous began at a period when Europe had just been started by Luther's valiant onslaught upon the papacy, closer to 1500. Many of these tombstones, and especially the oldest, we can testify from a personal investigation, look as clear and as fresh as if they were engraved only a century ago. Okay, this was written late 1800s. Hillcliffe is undoubtedly one of the oldest Baptist churches in England. The earliest deeds of the property have been irrevocably lost, but the extant deeds, which go back considerably over 200 years, describe the property as being for the Baptists. The modern chapel stands upon the gentle slope of a sandstone hill. The wood which embossed the ancient sanctuary has long since been cut down, and the present modest meeting house is conspicuous from afar, from the streets of the quaint old Warrington and from the wide reach of the level country by which the historic town is surrounded. James Kenworthy, who wrote the latest book on the Hillcliffe Church, stated that on the subject of baptism, they have always followed the practice of the Christians of the New Testament and of the early churches, baptism by immersion or dipping. As early as at least the 1300s, when and this takes place.
And where they came from and those that started them.
Those that started them.
Before also.
Practicing the same thing, yeah. So, and I bring it up and emphasize it, and we probably won't go much further today, because almost all modern present thought is that Baptist practices and history only goes back to the 1640s in English with these two people. Because that's where most attention is given. But there's a lot of history that predates and goes back to England, Wales, of separatists, even if they weren't known as Baptists, that even become the origin of a lot of Baptist churches here in the U.S. Because when we read about them, and it'll probably be, this is already April, sometime in May, and then we don't go into June. So, but what I'll try to get to, at least some of the statements that recognize that third group of Baptists that came over from England, that were not general Baptists, that were not particular Baptists, but that were Welsh Baptists, that most history doesn't follow, but they still recognize if you read the writings of those days. Okay? That's why so much of my attention is given to these. It's the Welsh Baptists that predate England and even their monarchy, that our own succession and our own history goes back through. We don't have to depend on these and modern history that seems to be so popular, especially on the internet and by the Southern Baptists and by the Fundamental Baptists. Most even missionary Baptists won't give enough attention to go back and research this. But boy, it's readily available. Brother Shrum's got some books and records and resources and things that I don't. The newer books that the ABA put out 10 or 15 years ago still quotes a lot of records about the separatists long time before this. We'll come back to this subject in a couple of weeks. Let's stand. We'll let Brother Cooper come up.